Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the greats check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 greats. Even 51 greats.
And the rest of the 2007 NFL
season. Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Patriots Express keeps rolling right along here inside Patriots Nation and Patriots.com Radio. Hey, everybody. John Rook with you here for the Wednesday edition of Patriots Playbook. Of course, a little bit of a shorter week than normal here because of the Monday night game and Patriots Monday programming moving to Tuesday yesterday. So we have today and we have tomorrow to get you ready for the Cleveland Browns coming back to Gillette Stadium this Sunday afternoon in a 1 p.m. Eastern time kickoff. We will spend a little bit of time today recapping the Monday night win, 34-13 over the Cincinnati Bengals. And I just mentioned to Gary before we joined you here on the program today, I said, that was on Monday night, and perhaps you'll agree. But on Monday night, that was as dominating a performance as I've really seen New England have at any point in time over the course of the 15 years that I've been, you know, working for this team, covering this team over the last 20 years. In fact, I'm willing to go out on a limb, and this may not be much of a stretch here, but I'm willing to say that I've been covering pro football, and I've been, you know, as a professional for right at 30 years, not as long as some people that have covered the Patriots, but pretty close. That's as dominant a performance, and this team, even through four games, is as dominant a pro football team as I can remember. And I lived through the Steelers' heyday of the 1970s, those Dallas Cowboy teams of the early 90s, those San Francisco 49er teams of the 80s. You talk about dynasties in the NFL. Heck, I remember as a boy the Green Bay Packers teams of the 60s. And the way that New England is playing right now, they are as dominant as any one of those aforementioned teams that signify their particular decade in which they dominated. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that the Patriots will be remembered as the team of the new millennium, team of the 2000s. They've already, having won three Super Bowls in this decade, there's no doubt in my mind they'll go down, but they are on track. They are on schedule. You hear, that's one of Jaws' favorite terms, right? Ron Jaworski, he says, you know, the Patriots are on schedule. Well, they're on schedule, folks, for this year. There's no doubt about it. There's no two ways about it. To say, oh, it's too early to start talking about it. No. You're sticking your head in the sand and you're ignoring it. And you're not giving yourself a chance, I don't think, to fully appreciate a football team that is as dominant on field as maybe has been in this league in at least 15 years, since the tail end of that Dallas Cowboys, you know, dynasty of the early 90s when they were running, you know, that streak together. And I think you can go back even further to that. Then, you know, the 4 out of 6 or whatever it was, 4 out of 7 that the San Francisco 49ers put together and what the Steelers put together in the 1970s. This team deservedly is up there with them. But this team individually, the 2007 version of the Patriots, is as powerful a professional football team as maybe I've ever seen. They have every ingredient you need to win a championship in this day and age of free agency and movement and salary cap, you know, the salary cap era. This Patriots team is a throwback, in my opinion, to NFL teams before the advent of the salary cap, before the advent of the salary cap era. There's no doubt in my mind that this team is as dominant as some of those aforementioned teams. And the fact that they're able to put this kind of a unit together in this day and age is just, it's a tribute to both Scott Pioli and to Bill Belichick, as we've opined quite a bit, both you and I and anybody else who, you know, is a part of this program. But now, you know, I think you get the sense even the PFW guys are kind of behind this a little bit. You're ignoring the obvious if you say anything else. At no time on Monday night did I think this team was in danger of losing the game, even when it was 10-7. Because Brady had just thrown the pick. He had set them up, you know, in good shape at the, what was it, 30, 35-yard line. And, you know, if you want to get nitpicky, well, yeah, I guess you can still have an issue with the Patriots' red zone defense at this stage of the game. But even though they convert that and make it 10-7, I'm thinking, I swear to you, I'm thinking right out of the gate, well, they'll just come down and they'll score, and they'll go 17-7 at halftime. And, you know, there won't be anything to worry about. And then they'll be on cruise control. And, of course, that's what happened. The Patriots allowed the Bengals to score because the Patriots allowed the Bengals to score. The Bengals didn't earn. I mean, you know, the Bengals really didn't earn anything. What they got, the Patriots pretty much gave them. So, you know, that's the scary part of this football team. Forget, you know, the Randy Moss and four straight games of over 100 yards and such, which is kind of hard to forget, but put all that aside, the Patriots are as dominating defensively for a team in the NFL now as anybody I've seen in recent memory. That includes the Baltimore defense of 2000, which everybody seems to think in modern day salary cap time has dominated a single defense maybe as we've seen in the NFL in the last almost 20 years. And admittedly, it was a darn good one. But I think this Patriots team, as soon as Rodney Harrison comes back after this weekend and you're able to get Richard Seymour back perhaps in another couple of weeks with the kind of depth that you will have at your disposal, I think we'll see the red zone defense improve. I think we'll see teams struggle to score the 13 or 14 a game that they're getting. And that the only way that the Patriots lose a game is if they cough one up. If they just hairball one. You know, well, they committed five turnovers in a game. Well, you're going to lose. You deserve to lose. And even then, it may not be hard. It may not be easy for them to lose, even gacking it up. I honestly think, as the guys were talking about, that after watching the relative ease with which they dispatched, and again, Cincinnati, it's a very good offensive football team, but they were missing Rudy Johnson. Defensively, they obviously have tremendous problems, and they're woefully thin in the linebacking core with all the injuries that they've had. So maybe it's not quite a fair comparison. Maybe we'll get a better picture when they go on the road week after next to play at Dallas. You know, when they go on the road to play at Dallas, even though Dallas arguably doesn't have much of a better defense than Cincinnati, they might be a little healthier. They might be a little healthier, and that's a grudging might. But offensively, Dallas will have everything and then some that Cincinnati has. It's just that Dallas is competing in the NFC right now, and that's to their advantage because I don't think from top to bottom the NFC is still anywhere near as strong as the AFC is. I think the gap is closing a little bit, but it's still not quite there. I think the AFC is still overall top to bottom a stronger conference within the NFL. But Dallas will be a test. If they can get by Dallas, and then you've got Indianapolis, who arguably doesn't have as good a defense as they had a year ago, then, you know, you're going into that bye week sitting pretty at 10-0 or whatever it is, 9-0, and you're thinking, 16-0 is a real possibility. But I don't think that the team itself will really start looking at it until they get by, as I suggested to the PFW guys, until they get by like Baltimore or, you know, somewhere along those lines. And they may never acquiesce to that. They may never. And frankly, I'd be a little surprised if they did, but it's only because we're going to keep talking about it, you're going to keep talking about it, and the media, the national media, will keep talking about this. It is a story that won't go away. It's omnipresent. We're going to live with it from here on out. And you may say, you know, John, let's focus one game at a time. Let's do what the team is doing. Why are we doing anything differently? That's not how this team was built, blah, blah, blah. Well, okay, I understand that thought process. But first of all, we as fans and we as media and we as observers can do this because we're not out there, you know, trading pops with these guys. So this is what we do, and I think we do a pretty good job of it. We talk about it. Is it realistic? Is it possible? Where are the potential pitfalls? And I think we've done a pretty good job of identifying most of that, but we'll take it week to week. And, you know, realizing that if you're just tuning into the program, you may be here today or tomorrow, but you may not be here next week or what have you. Hopefully, you know, you never miss one. You can podcast. You can always download and catch up with anything you might have missed. But fact is that this is stuff that's going to keep coming back. So Wednesday, anyway, we've got a lot of things to get to today. Steve King, who covers the Browns for ClevelandBrowns.com, he's going to join us at the top of the next hour, 3 o'clock Eastern. And we'll get some of the Browns' point of view. Things are going a little bit better right now for Romeo Crennel and his team, with the team at 2-2 going into Sunday's matchup. We will also hear from Rodney Harrison, who had a news conference, and he was also part of Patriots Monday on Tuesday this week with Dale and Holly on WEEI in Boston. And if you didn't get a chance to hear that, well, then we're going to play Rodney's interview for you, because obviously he will be back this time next week. He will be back in uniform and on the sidelines and potentially ready to play. So Rodney's return, Patriots head coach Bill Belichick from earlier today at Gillette Stadium. And time permitting, we'll have the conference call today with Romeo Crennel, the former Patriots offensive coordinator, and Jamal Lewis, running back for the Browns, who obviously came from Baltimore. So we've got all of that coming up for you on the program. And if we don't get to Romeo and Jamal, then we'll have that for you on tomorrow's program, along with Russell Baxter from ESPN, who will be with us. So he's our regular Thursday guest in that time slot. And so that's what we've got. In the meantime, email-wise, guys, I do want to continue with what I think will be a normal Tuesday, and since this is kind of Tuesday game week for us here, even though it's Wednesday, I want you to nitpick. So we'll call it a nitpick Wednesday as opposed to a nitpick Tuesday today, because, frankly, we're picking on perfection here, or as close to perfection as you can possibly get in professional sports. I want you to take a look at the Patriots team based on what you saw, if you happen to see the game or certainly listen to the game on Monday night, and tell me what you liked and what you didn't like and where you think there is room for improvement. So let's go about the nitpicking that way. There's room for improvement, blank. Fill the blank. Fill in the blank. That's our nitpick topic for today. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. Webradio@patriots.com. You may phone if you'd like. 508-543-7482. Again, the area code 508 and the telephone number 543-7482. And we'll be happy to take your phone calls as well. I will look at the game somewhat critically because, again, I think we all realize here that there's just not a lot to get upset with here. There's not a lot to nitpick over here. But I would tell you that, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind based on Monday is the red zone defense. You know, you give a, I realize you give a team, you're already up 10-0. Brady throws one away that obviously he should not have thrown at all, and I think he admitted that as much after the game. Threw in a kind of a double coverage situation. They pick him off. They set him up shop at the 35-yard line. Now, there's still a chance, even though the team is now, you got the Bengals sensing momentum here. Like, okay, we can crawl back into this game. So you've given them an immediate electricity boost here. You're giving them a big charge. But still, the mark of a team that's resilient and the mark of a team that has championship caliber is the ability to shut a team down or at least hold them and not let them break through for seven when you give a team the ball that deep in your territory. And this defense was not able to do that. Now, they were able to hold a couple of other drives to field goals, obviously. But that one did concern me a little bit, and, you know, that made, at the time, the Patriots are 6-for-6 against in red zone D. Now, I think they got close, because I don't have the drive chart in front of me from Monday. So I'm sure someone will correct me if I'm incorrect here. But I don't think that the Bengals cracked the 20-yard line the rest of the game after that touchdown. I do not believe they did. I think they got close, especially in both of those field goals that they scored, but they did not crack the 20. So, therefore, they did not have, technically, another red zone opportunity against the Patriots. And if I am correct, then, in that assumption, then this Patriots defense has given up six trips inside their red zone in the first four games, and they've allowed touchdowns on all six of them. 6-for-6 against, which is probably the worst in the NFL in terms of red zone D. Now, the fact that they've only given up six possessions inside their red zone is probably number one in the NFL right now. I haven't looked at what Pittsburgh did over the last week and a half, two weeks now. But the six possessions in the red zone may very well be number one, if not one, certainly number two in the NFL. You know, you only give up six times inside your red zone in 4 weeks. That's pretty amazing. Of course, the red zone being your own 20-yard line, or, you know, you go into the opponent's red zone, it's there inside their 20-yard line. But they've given up touchdowns on every time that the opponent has gotten inside the 20. And that is something that will need to change. That is certainly an area that we deservedly should nitpick at today. What I'd kind of like to know from you is that other than Seymour and Harrison returning to the fold, where else defensively could this team potentially improve? Are you that keen an observer of this team defensively to know? I've got a couple of ideas on that. I'm going to hold them for right now simply because I'd like to see if somebody else recognizes what I recognize. And let's talk about that. Webradio@patriots.com is how you reach us on the program again. So that's one thing we can certainly nitpick about. Brady threw his second interception. Oh, God. You want to nitpick on that? I will tell you that I'm also a little bit concerned over the durability of Lawrence Maroney. He was a late scratch. He was running on the field before the game. He was suited up, and he was a late scratch. Now, I realize that Maroney had the offseason shoulder surgery, and they certainly gingerly brought him along, if not babied him, during the course of training camp. But now for him to have gone through 3 weeks and to all of a sudden pull up a little bit lame and not go, I mean, I realize that they probably have the luxury of depth on their side, so I might be reading a little bit more into this than is really necessary, and the reason that they have a luxury now is because they didn't expect to get what they're getting out of Sammy Morris. But that notwithstanding, I think that we have a little bit of cause for concern over the durability of Lawrence Maroney. Now, you may not think, well, that's worth a darn to nitpick over. But when you realize now that Sammy Morris is your number one guy, or he's certainly at very worst now 1A, can you win with that? Should you win with that? Maybe you're of the opinion that the running game really isn't necessary when you have receivers like Moss and Welker and Stallworth. I mean, goodness gracious. But I do think you have to have at least the semblance of a running game, because if you do have that running game, then obviously, you know, it's much easier for a guy like Moss to catch nine and go for over 100 yards. And it's much easier for Welker to get open, you know, in the seams underneath that defense. And, you know, when you have a running game, then, you know, you don't get double teams in the defensive backfield. There's room to run. You know, because they can't afford to load you up in the box because they're too scared of getting beat over the top. That's why we have, you know, if the running game wasn't necessary, we wouldn't do it in football. You just wouldn't do it. Long gone are the days of running games probably dominating football. I happen to think all things are cyclical. You know, long gone are the days of teams rushing for, I think, you know, 300 yards routinely in college football, although you see it still every now and then, with teams that are basically ground and or option oriented, but you don't see many of those anymore. Teams run pro offenses. They run spread offenses. The spread offense in football today is like option slash wishbone offense back in the 70s and even into the 80s. And the game of football will catch up eventually defensively. It always has, and it always will. And it may take a little while longer, but defenses will learn somehow to catch up with spread offense. And it probably will start with recruiting and bringing in faster, quicker players, guys that can move sideline to sideline as opposed to going north-south. And once you're able to sprint and be able to close those gaps off, perfect example of that, honestly, I'll use this as an analogy here. I covered the West Virginia-South Florida game for a national radio last Friday night in Tampa. So I was at Raymond James Stadium doing that football game. And thank you. Thank you very much. And West Virginia brought in an offense that was averaging over 350 yards a game on the ground. They're one of the few teams that dominates on the ground anymore in college football. But they do it from a spread offense. Quarterback stays in the shotgun. They do the zone read where they either hand off or fake, or the quarterback keeps. So it's an option offense. They just do it from a shotgun rather than under center. Same option principles. And South Florida's defense is as quick sideline to sideline as I've seen of anybody this year. And I'll tell the other defense that I've seen that may be as quick as South Florida's, and that's Cincinnati's. Goodness gracious. That was I didn't realize they had those kind of athletes in Cincinnati, but they do apparently. You know, and they've cracked the top 25 now, and I think they'll stay there. I think Cincinnati is a very good football team. Wouldn't be surprised at all to see South Florida and Cincinnati win the Big East. But that having been said, South Florida's lateral quickness and getting to the gaps shut off West Virginia around the corners where they could not utilize their speed. And West Virginia does not have a big back that can pound you, you know, between the tackles. So it will take teams bringing in fast slash quick athletes to shut down spread offenses and shut down running games. And I think you probably need to see more of that in the NFL as well. The game will have to migrate that way. And then I think you'll see more and more teams willing to try to pound away on you and then go over the top if you can shut off the corner. Just a thought, but I think that's the way kind of football is going. And so I think, you know, eventually defenses always catch up with offenses. And the brilliance that has been behind, you know, the Patriots, you know, formation here is the fact that the coaching staff and the personnel people have been able to stay, if not a half step, a full step ahead of other teams in thinking about things like this. How is the game going? Are we doing the right things? Are we cutting edge? And I'd say the answer to that is, yeah, they're cutting edge. They realized last year after the season was over that we got as close as we did. We lost a game we should have won. We should have been in the Super Bowl last year. So how can we improve ourselves? How can we make ourselves more dangerous? Well, we have to have the ability to stretch the field. How do we do that? We go and get ourselves world beaters of receivers. And they couldn't have gotten three better than Moss, Stallworth, and Welker. But they were also able to sell those three guys on the plan here in New England. Otherwise, guys like Randy Moss don't take pay cuts. Guys like Dante Stallworth don't come in here and take a pay cut over what he might have been able to get somewhere else. So they bought into the system. And, of course, that system is what has made New England successful in this decade. Getting guys to buy into the system. Championships mean something. So they immediately attack the need, and they're able to stay ahead of the competition by doing that. The Patriots are one of the few teams. There are a couple of others that think like this. But the Patriots are one of the teams in the league that don't really care about what the other guys do. Now, by that, I don't mean that they don't take the other opponents seriously. They do film study, and they do plan, and they try to see where weaknesses are and how to attack it, and they'll come up with a game plan how to beat the Browns on Sunday. But they are worried more about themselves and their execution and the problems that they can present to the opposition. That is their primary concern. They're more focused on us. Can we be the best football team we can be? That's what they're concerned with. And they've been very successful with it. So they're staying a half a step ahead of the game. And, you know, so if you start to see a few new wrinkles, either offensively or defensively, or you see some personnel changes or some shifts or what have you, I mean, this is where, you know, and many of you have emailed this in, this is where, you know, in Bill you should trust, you know, and we say that somewhat, you know, flippantly, but, you know, it's hard to argue with the success you've had thus far. So if a move is made that you don't agree with, I think you have to cut them a little slack and give them the benefit of the doubt, because they're trying to stay ahead of the learning curve here in the entire NFL. Now, maybe at some point in time, somewhere, it doesn't work. A move doesn't happen for them. We've already seen some personnel moves that don't necessarily qualify as having worked. And I think you can probably come up with a few. I won't be disparaging here, but you can probably come up with a few. But the system itself is greater than the individual pieces of that system. You know, the individual players that you go to plug into the system. The system still works. So the intrigue here is to see how they can continue to expand and recreate themselves and continue to stay ahead of the game over the other 31 teams in the NFL. That's the intrigue. That's the challenge. That's how the Patriots challenge themselves week after week now when they're dominating teams. It's like, okay, so we dominated Cincinnati. Now, how do we dominate Cleveland? How do we beat Cleveland? How do we continue to make ourselves better? How can we be a team that people will talk about for ages? And that is motivation enough, I think, for the players down the hallway. They've all got egos. The coaching staff, they've all got egos. This is an ego-driven business. You wouldn't have, you know, nobody would care who won and lost if it wasn't ego-driven. So don't kid yourself for a moment. But what they're ego-driven about is not the salary check that they bring home every week. It's the number of championships. It's the ability to go down as a winner. That's why you've seen Randy Moss, you know, play the good soldier and be the good soldier. And he's given us no reason to believe it'll be anything otherwise this year. They want to win, and they want to win badly. And when you have that burning desire to win and everybody's on the same page, you dominate. That's how they did it Monday night. You saw a Bengals team that was, you know, beginning to snipe at each other. How about that conversation, that argument between, Palmer and Johnson coming off the field right before at halftime, you know, over the missed route that Asante Samuel stepped in front and got the interception. Beautiful. And they're arguing each other. Great. Go at it. Somebody take a swing. You like that. That's good. They're not on the same page. And a team that is not on the same page, they're not together, is a team that is beaten. They were done at halftime, and you knew it, and I knew it, and everybody else should have known it. And teams are going to get more and more frustrated over their inability to scheme and slow down and cause the Patriots problems. The only way that this New England team loses is if it loses. And that's, by that I mean they have to cough it up. They're going to have to gack it up. You know, Brady's going to have an inexplicably bad day. Morris or Maroney are going to have to leave the football on the ground. Or we're going to have a game where, you know, the defense chips in its share of, you know, 12 penalties or something, you know? You know, where we get, you know, maybe a 14 or 15 penalty game where, you know, people are moving left and right. And, you know, it's just one of those games where nothing seems to be working. And it'll probably have to be a combination of the penalties and poor decisions and turnovers for it to happen the way that this football team is playing right now. It may take a lethal dose, a cocktail that of some proportion that we just don't know exists yet. You know, that's part of it. So, at any rate, webradio@patriots.com. That's our email address. Nitpicking a bit here on Wednesday. Look at Monday night's game. Where should we be concerned with this team? What did you observe from Monday night that you might not have seen previous to Monday night that could be a problem? Could be a problem. I've already given you one or two. I'll give you another one before all is said and done, but let's get to some emails. This one comes from Dave, who's in the Philippines. Sent it in right at the tail end of PFW in progress, and he says, I totally agree about not playing Junior on offense. I'd really hate to see him get hurt. I do remember, however, that he specifically asked Coach B to let him do so. Given how much the coach encourages players to be flexible and play multiple positions, he may have found it hard to resist giving a captain the chance to be an example for the rest of the team, especially a player with such a long history in the league. I think you're absolutely right, Dave. I have to admit, I cringe a little bit when I see Junior say I'll come in to play blocking fullback, but I know that he specifically asked to do that. He wants to do that. He wants to show his versatility. He wants to lead by example. How can you deny a guy like that? And the answer is you don't. Fortunately for the Patriots, they have enough depth where if something, goodness gracious, God forbid, knock on wood, something happens, they can fill the gap. But right now, if he wants to do it, he's willing to do it, I think you need to let him do it. It's a great example setter. Dave says, I'd love to see the team go 16-0, but it's much more important to me to see them go 3-0 in the playoffs. Get that bye week and home field, and that's enough for me. I wouldn't blame the team for a second if they have those things wrapped up at week 14 if they decided to rest the vets for a while. On the other hand, if they look as good against Dallas in 2 weeks as they have so far, maybe they can win those last two games, even without most of the starters. Miami at home in week 16 should be a very good time to rest some people and still win. It's too early to know if the Giants in week 17 will be a challenge or not. Bottom line, as long as they don't get a lot of injuries, they could do it. They're just too deep at most positions to lose based on one or two people. Of course, if something happens to Brady, everyone will panic, but I'm not even sure about that. After all, who knew Tom would be what he is when Bledsoe got hurt? Maybe Matt Castle could step up and win. After all, Coach B seems to like him. He's a much better judge of football ability than anyone else I know of. And finally, he says, looks like Vic Carucci sort of took back his comment about the Patriots being a pass-only offense. He didn't actually say that he was wrong before, but he did acknowledge that the Pats were balanced between run and pass this week. I guess having it on national TV for everyone to see sort of embarrassed him. Good point. And Dave, an excellent email. Thank you very much for that. Let's see now. What else do we have going up here? We have Clinton, and he is writing us, Clinton, Omaha. says, guys, can you guys set up video of Felger and Fred boxing? We had the Thrill in Manila. What will this throwdown be called? I give the edge to Felger. What do you guys think? All kidding aside, love the show. What do you think the odds are of having Moss break 2,000 yards or 20 TDs? First of all, I don't give the edge to Mike Felger against Fred. Okay, Clint? Nope, not a shot. Second of all, 2,000 yards?
Give me a break.
Yeah. You know, it's great to think about. I mean, certainly at the pace he's going, he'll obliterate that. I just don't see it happening. I said this last week. Someone said the 22 touchdown. Could he break Jerry Rice's single-season record of 22 touchdowns? And my answer was no. I thought that the Patriots would probably be conscious to the point where they would literally spread it out. But if teams are going to continue to single cover the guy, I suppose it's possible. I still think the odds would be high of him breaking both of those numbers, Clint. I'd say... I'd still say it's probably 80-20 against. But let's, you know what, Clint? Let's revisit this in about 2 or 3 weeks. Or better yet, let's revisit this during the off week. When we get to the bye week after Indy and you're still undefeated, and if he's got 1,000 yards or so by then, then let's revisit it, and I might rethink that. I will say that it's possible, but still highly unlikely. Both of them. Because there's plenty of talent to go around on this team. I think you realize they're going to try to make everybody happy as best as they can. Pratt in Germantown, Maryland. Let's see. I'm just loving being a Patriot fan right now. It is too good to be true. But as Paul mentioned, we're so high in the rankings on both sides of the ball, and that really shows how effective the players have been that we have acquired in this busy offseason. Starting with Adalys Thomas, wow, what a player. He's simply living up to all the hype he had coming in. Agreed, Pratt. Agreed. He's a difference maker is what he is. Asante Samuel is proving his caliber of play again. I think the Patriots should really concentrate on keeping him for the long term. Moss, Stallworth, Welker, all worth every penny. However, the concern I have is, while it is fun to ride this wave, and hopefully we'll ride it to Arizona and get another Lombardi trophy, what are the legitimate chances, percentage-wise, that both Stallworth and Moss will be around next season? This team, if kept intact, can win many Super Bowls. Is there a chance this team keeps both next season? Well, I've kind of made it a policy, Pratt. I'll be honest with you. I've made it a policy to not talk about next season as much as I can humanly avoid it. I want to try to enjoy this season, and I think all Patriots fans should focus on this season. After all, we're only through week 4. We've got 13 more weeks to go in the regular season. Plus the playoffs. You know, 4 weeks in the playoffs, 3 games potentially you could play. We're talking 17 weeks left before you can hopefully say the Super Bowl, the Lombardi Trophy is back in New England. So let's see if we can enjoy these last 17 weeks, can we? Before we really have to start thinking about 2008? Both of them next year? I still think it's unlikely. But again, that's if you ask me now after week 4. I might change my mind after week 7. I might change my mind after week 9. I might change my mind after the Super Bowl. The players themselves might change their mind. They may have thought, hey, I'm one. I'm getting a ring. I'm done. They might decide, you know what? That wasn't so bad. I've got enough money. Now I want immortality. I want to win back-to-back. I want to win, you know, 5 out of 8 or whatever, you know, it would end up being. I want to be a part of that. You know? So you don't know what players are going to think. It's clear that, you know, both of those guys are going to end up having to decide that they'll, you know, probably play for pennies on the dollar that they could get elsewhere. But I'm certainly willing to allow for the fact that that's a possibility. Maybe they would want to. It's just way, way too early to even think about it, to be honest with you. But at least I made an effort there, Pratt. Kerry in Maine. How do you feel about Tom Jackson's remark about grudgingly picking the Pats to win before the Monday night game? Isn't he supposed to be non-biased? Well, see, this is the thing about guys like Tom Jackson, Kerry, and Mark Schlereth, and the other guys that, you know, pick games on ESPN or Fox or whatever, especially the ex-athletes and the analysts. You know, they ask those guys to be analysts, but they're not journalists. They're paid to give their opinions. They're like on-air columnists for your local newspaper. They give opinions, and they're paid to give them. So when he, you know, picks somebody, they're in a situation where they're asked to give their pick. He's simply trying to be a contrarian because he knows it's too easy to say, okay, Patriots win. You know, it's boring. It doesn't make for good TV. Every week you're going to find, no matter your favorite pregame, no matter, you know, which TV show you like to watch, I guarantee this, all right? I almost guarantee, well, I'll say almost guarantee because there will be some weeks when they'll probably all pick the Pats. But I think there will always be a show somewhere, every week, no matter who the Patriots play, that someone will say, you know what, I think Buffalo's got a shot, or I think Miami's got a shot, or I think Cleveland's got a shot, and here's why. Because they're all going to say, you know, it has to end sometime. Why not now? Why not now when they're fat and sassy and they're overconfident? Or they're going on the road, or so-and-so got hurt last week, and I think that'll be a bigger factor this week than people realize. You're going to find somebody saying that and doing that. And they're going to just throw it up there, and they're going to hope it sticks, and they're going to hope they get it right. And if by some chance they do stumble, then they're going to come back, and then they're, believe you me, they'll be all over it. Hey, see what I said? I was right. You'll see somebody do that. So is he supposed to be unbiased? You know, no, not necessarily. He's not supposed to be. Newspaper reporters are generally supposed to be unbiased. Beat guys are supposed to be unbiased. But the TV guys, I look at them like newspaper columnists. They're paid to give their opinions. Craig in South Carolina. The Browns are poor on D and do not play well at all on the road. I don't see this as a trap game at all. Pats are having to ratchet up the focus for the Browns because of the short week, having played on the road Monday night. Pats will have another 20-point victory. Looking ahead at Dallas, nothing like moving on, Craig. What are T.O.'s chances of playing the entire game if he continues to come across the middle? I'm sorry, but I can't help but feel that between Thomas and Harrison, T.O. is going to get jacked up. Yeah, probably. Probably. I'll look forward to that. That'll be worth watching to see, you know, Rodney Harrison and look out for T.O. And, I mean, I realize that, you know, Harrison and Moss don't have to go against each other, but, oh, think of the hype. That'll be huge. And they'll be rabid in Dallas. Believe you me, Cowboys fans will be pumped for that one. Pumped and jacked. They will be. As I'm sure we all will be around here too. There's some good early season excitement for that game building up. But you're right, you don't want to overlook this weekend. He'll play every bit of the game that he possibly can. You know, because there's nothing better than what, you know, T.O. would like right now and Tony Romo would like right now than to, you know, put a Patriot pelt. That would legitimize Dallas's team in the NFC. That would make them the team to beat in the NFC. It's only too bad that the tuna still isn't coaching there, huh? Clinton Omaha writes back. He says, guys, Merriweather looked like he was talking a lot of crap Monday. To me, it's a little too early for him to be running his trap. Where do you see the safety rotation going with Harrison back? Who'll get less snaps, Sanders, Wilson, Harrison? Also, I like Randall Gay's play so far. How do you feel he's playing? I don't think that the rotation is going to hurt a lot. My guess is that, you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Harrison work himself back into it and Sanders continue to start. That wouldn't surprise me at all. But if Harrison does start, the player who's going to get less snaps is James Sanders. Initially, it might be Harrison, but let's just wait and see how this week in practice kind of plays out, you know, because they're back to practice today, short work week, so they're back at it today. Let's just see how the week works. But at least my initial inclination is that Sanders is the one that will get fewer snaps. Randall Gay is playing himself back into shape and doing some good things, and it's largely because he's healthy. So he's able to kind of get back to that kind of a level where he was a couple of years ago. Long as he continues to stay healthy. Fortunately, the Patriots do have a bit of depth there, at least now, and they took great pains to try to create that for themselves because of all the injury problems they've had in the secondary over the last two seasons. So, you know, if they can stay relatively injury-free, then guys can really play and play without fear. And that's, I think, the biggest thing. He says, I currently live in Nebraska, and while I'm not a Cornhusker fan, I think the Chargers are having the same problem the Huskers are having. Turner's a good play caller, as is Bill Callahan, but they take a math approach to the game. They see X's and O's, but they don't know how to inspire and motivate. I think that's a great analogy. Callahan, as we all know, Clint, is a pro coach. He may not have been a very good one, but he's got a pro mentality. And frankly, I'm a little surprised that the success that he has had at Nebraska has come as quickly as it has. I'm one of those in the camp that, I thought that, you know, the former staff got a short shrift. I kind of like Frank Solich. That may be, you know, like saying you like the devil in Nebraska, but I think he got a bum rap. Nevertheless, I'm pleasantly surprised to see Callahan have the kind of success he's had. But I think to an extent you're correct. Brilliant minds, but brilliant minds don't always win games. I think you have to also be a motivator. I think you also have to be a leader. And I think you have to be, more than anything else, a psychoanalyst. You've got to know when to flip the on switch and when to turn it off. You got to know when to push him and know when to back away. You have to do that in the pro game too, but you really have to do that in the college game because there's just more of a rah-rah thing there. And that's why Pete Carroll has been so doggone successful at SC. He's a rah-rah guy. He had a collegiate approach to the game that wore thin in New England on the players at that time. And we all said at the time, you know, college is perfect for him. And look, that's playing out. USC could end up winning the national championship again this year. And I wish nothing but great success for Coach Carroll. He's a good football coach. He's a good man. You know, and I do believe that, you know, the success he's had is all earned. Nobody's given him anything. Actually, some good questions there, Clint. Thank you very much for those. Let's continue here before we get into a break, and then we get into Rodney Harrison. This one comes from Ricky. Look at the email address. This is from Gabe in Newtown, PA. He says, John, what's up with Kornheiser making references to the Patriots and the 27 Yankees? Doesn't he know that comparing a Boston team to a Yankee team is just not cool? What a pinhead. Tony Kornheiser is a muckraker. He's the kind of guy that, you know, will say something outlandish to get you thinking. That's all. You know, pinhead or whatever, I've always liked Tony. I've always appreciated his work. I've always known what he does. So I kind of take it with the right attitude. But comparing a Boston team to a Yankee team, I think even he would admit upon second thought, probably wasn't a smart thing to do. He says, do you think that Tom Brady will throw three touchdowns this week and tie Troy Aikman as the only quarterbacks to throw three TDs in five consecutive games? I had not given that thought, Gabe, until you just mentioned it. Three touchdowns this week, he'll tie Aikman as the only QB to throw three touchdowns in five consecutive games. Yeah, I'd say he's got a very good chance at that this week. Very good chance of that, especially if Maroney is continued to be gimpy. Even more of a chance, more of a reason for him to throw over the top. Yeah, I'd say his chances are certainly better than 50-50 to do that this week. Gabe, nice to hear from you as well. All right, let's pause here, and you want to go ahead and get right into Rodney Harrison, Gary? Okay, let's do that. Let's give you a chance to listen into Rodney Harrison's conversation with members of Patriots media from the locker room. And obviously, we all know that it'll be a focal point for not only a lot of the members of the media, but for you and fans. You want to know how he's doing, what he's been doing. Is he remorseful? Is he ready to play? Can he get right back in there after this Sunday's game against Cleveland? So we'll just let you hear from Rodney himself. Here's Rodney Harrison.
Talk about that a little bit, what it means to rejoin the team this week.
Well, I mean, it seemed like a long 4 weeks, but, you know, you have the kids and playing with the kids and spending time with the wife and watching a lot of football, so I'm just glad to be back.
What are your thoughts on this team and how they've done the first 4 weeks?
They've been tremendous. Preparation, all the hard work they put in off season, doing mini camps, training camp, has really paid off, and just really looking forward to just adding to this team and just being a part of it again.
What have your teammates been saying to you since you've been back?
Just glad to have me back and, you know, just good to have me around. And basically, that's it.
What has your workout routine been to kind of stay in shape and be ready to play and come back?
Well, I've been working out twice a day. Pretty much did everything from on-field work to the weight room to you know, my usual yoga and Pilates and just doing a lot of different things I do in order to stay in shape for training camp. And, you know, I'm ready to go. It's just a matter of getting out there and really getting that experience.
Brady, how much contact do you have with guys during the 4 weeks?
I talk to several players, and they're supportive of me and encouraging and very positive. And, you know, and that's what it's about. I told them to just continue to focus on football. Don't worry about me because I'm fine. And spent a lot of time with the family and played some golf and just enjoyed myself.
It's a coach's decision, obviously, but once you get out there and practice this week, do you think you'll be able to possibly play on Sunday or would it take more time?
Nah, I mean, whatever he decides. If he wants me out there, I'll be ready. If he doesn't, then that's on him. I'm always ready to play football.
Rodney, what do you think about the job that James Andrews did?
James is, he's been, you know, basically subbing in for me for the last couple of years. And, I mean, he's a good, consistent player who works extremely hard, very smart football player that's always going to be in the right place and just a great guy to have on your team.
Rodney, I think you made a statement when the suspension was levied concerning the money you had to that.
No, I mean, today is a day that I'm focusing on, really, on just Cleveland and all the weapons and doing the things I have to do, get caught up with the game plan and things of that sort. So there's really no reason for me to continue to elaborate on the past. I think the last month you guys have said enough, and I said what I felt, and I'm a better man because of it. I'm a better person. Hopefully I'll be a better football player, and just look forward to getting my life and getting everything back on track and just moving forward.
So the attacks on you have been fair, or have they been hurtful to you?
No, I think initially, anytime someone attacks your character, you know, of course you get a little defensive, but, you know, I understand totally, and you guys, you have a right to, you know, what you say and what you feel. I understand you have a job to do, and I respect that. I've always respected that. And, you know, it's just up to me to become better, to become a better person, to learn from it and to try to be an example and tell, you know, young people don't make bad decisions. And you make a bad decision, it will have, you know, long-term effects on you. So I think that's an important message to get across and not make similar mistakes like that again. So, like I said, I'm just looking forward to getting back and just being positive and just smiling.
Do you feel that 4 weeks away is kind of giving you some perspective on the game and some perspective on where you are in your career?
I've always had perspective. I mean, I've been hurt. I've been to the mountaintop. I've been hurt, injured, torn knees. I mean, I've always had perspective. I've never really taken the game for granted. It's just one of those things that happen, whether through injury, whether through the suspension. You always, you know, understand that whether you're playing the game or not, you're going to miss the game. You have a love, a passion for the game, but eventually, you know, one day that's going to end and you have to move forward. So I still have an opportunity. I'm going to try to take advantage of it.
You talked about that the last couple of years. Have been that way for you where you've had one injury, another injury, and now this. Mm-hmm. How tough is it mentally? You just keep coming back, coming back.
Well, I mean, obviously it's pretty tough, but, you know, tough times don't last, tough people do, so you just continue to try to put your best foot forward, try your best, stay positive, and just understand that, you know, life isn't football. You know, you have a lot of life left, and as I look at my kids and my wife and I understand that what I'm truly living for, you know, and I love the game, I have passion for the game, but at the same time, I understand it's not my life.
Do you feel you have anything to, you know, prove again to your teammates at all, or is their acceptance of you coming back enough?
Well, I mean, everyone may have different opinions, and everyone may not share that with you, but, I mean, like I said, I can't go out in my way to try to change everybody's opinion about me. I know what type of person I am, and I know the people close to me and the people I have contact with know and understand who I am and what I'm about. I mean, you know, whether it's through the Super Bowl victories, how I treated people, whether it's through the various injuries I've had. I've always treated people with respect. I've always tried to, you know, remain humble or have a level of humility about myself. And that's what I'm about. And you know, and that's what I look forward to continuing to do.
You missed getting your thoughts during the
spy
gate.
Sorry.
Teammates
the guys, they prepare hard. They work their butts off. We have some great players. I mean, these guys work very, very hard to, you know, to prepare themselves mentally, physically, in the weight room, on the field, in the classroom. They put a lot of hours in. So I just look forward to continued success. And I really don't know about the whole Spygate thing. I just know that these guys prepare themselves in a way that that's why they're 4-0. That's why we're 4-0 right now at this point.
What were your thoughts on watching this offense for 4 weeks?
It wasn't anything that surprised me because, I mean, during training camp, you know, it's just a different version of Indianapolis offense. I mean, because you have so many different weapons, so many different guys that can do so many different things, and you just can't focus on one key guy. So just a multitude of weapons and the ability to make plays, whether it's short, intermediate, or down the field.
Rodney, you think, you know,
when we all make mistakes, we have human nature is, if I knew what I knew then, what I know now, you know, I maybe would have made a different decision. And just going back to your decision, I'm curious, what is it now that you feel or that you know that maybe is different than what you were thinking at that time?
Don't make bad decisions. That's it. I mean, just, you know, like I said before, you know, whether you, whatever decision you make in your life is going to have consequences, good or bad. That's it. And the important thing is that you learn from it, that you continue to grow, and hopefully you don't make similar mistakes like that or decisions like that. So that's just something that you try to learn and you try to grow from and become better because of it.
What was the thought process at the time? Can you just maybe elaborate on that led to the decision?
No, I'm not going to elaborate on that. I mean, I'm facing Cleveland. I got Kellen Winslow Jr. I have to deal with, and we have to deal with, as well as Braylon Edwards and Jamal Lewis. And that's really what I'm focusing on, Mike. I don't want to just keep dwelling in the past. I mean, that's something for you guys to continue to do. But I'm looking forward to being here with my teammates. I'm looking forward to, you know, helping this team get to 5-0, and I'm looking forward to my future.
What does it mean to you that your teammates still believe in you and call your team leader? How does it make you feel?
Well, I mean, I appreciate the respect, and, respect is something that's earned. It's not given to you, and they know how hard I work day in and day out. They know what type of person I am, what type of character I have, and, you know, and I love these guys. I have a great deal of respect for these guys, so they know who I am because they spend, you know, 12, 14 hours a day with me, and you know, and that's what I take from it. You know, I just appreciate these guys supporting me, and if the shoe was on the other foot, you best believe I'd be supporting them.
Do you think the league should come up with a way to test for HGH, given that they don't now?
Ask the league. I'm not the commissioner. I'm just a football player. Looking forward to this Sunday.
Do you feel like this has been like somewhat of an invasion of your privacy, personal life?
No, I mean, I'm an NFL player. I'm playing a high-profile game, and that's part of it, you know. And you give yourselves up to the public and public scrutiny and criticism when you make mistakes, as well as praise and applause, you know, when you do well. So it's just all part of it. You just have to be able to handle it and be positive and keep your chin up and just move forward.
So very good questions and some very good comments, pointed comments by Rodney Harrison as he returns to the field this week for the Patriots for the game against Cleveland after serving a four-week suspension for substance abuse, for taking HGH and illegal performance-enhancing substances. So, you know, he'll be back on the field. We had a couple of emailers ask about, you know, how much time will he get, whose time will he take from, you know. Let's just wait and see how the situation goes. Let's see him get back in there. Let's see what kind of Rodney we've got. Is he really chomping at the bit to make a difference, to fit back in, to lead by example, and to let his play on the field do the speaking as opposed to something else? And I kind of got the sense, especially late in the interview with members of the Patriots media there, that, you know, yeah, I think he's, some of the questions are starting to wear thin, but I think he also realizes that he brought this on himself. And so, you know, you can say a lot of different things about Rodney Harrison. But the one thing that you can't say is that he's not a stand-up guy, because he is a stand-up guy. He's facing the music. He's accepting responsibility. He's paid his price. And he's going to try to move on. Anybody else that doesn't move on is probably doing themselves and Rodney Harrison, the Patriots, a disservice. Time to kind of move on with it. So we'll see how it goes from here. It's certainly added a little bit of spice to the week's progress with having him come back to the field this week. One other quick note, and then we'll get into timeout here, and then we'll come back with Steve King from the Cleveland Browns, clevelandbrowns.com. Just noticed that the Cincinnati Bengals picked up former Patriot linebacker Corey Mays off of waivers. Because they had to put Lamar Marshall on injured reserve yesterday because he tore his Achilles tendon in his left leg during the loss on Monday night. So the Patriots had to waive Corey Mays in an effort to sign Kyle Echol to come in and back up, if you will, Sammy Morris at running back because of the inactivity of Lawrence Maroney. And so Mays was put on waivers, and he has now been claimed by the Cincinnati Bengals. So former Patriot Corey Mays, who played in, what was it, 8 games last year for the Patriots in largely a mop-up and special teams role, is now a Cincinnati Bengal. So I noticed that on the waiver wire and then wanted to pass that along to you here today if you had not heard that one. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. We're going to sneak in a timeout, and then Steve King, who covers the Cleveland Browns at clevelandbrowns.com. And how much better is the Cleveland football team that will be coming into Gillette this Sunday afternoon to face the Patriots? How much better are they now than they were in week one or two? And is it enough of an improvement to get Romeo Crennel off of the hot seat? We'll ask him those questions and more coming up right here inside the playbook.
Your New England Revolution have been one of the hottest teams in Major League Soccer all season long. Summer may have turned to fall, but the soccer action is still hot at Gillette Stadium. Taylor Twellman.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pat Noonan.
Shot, and it's in! Patrick Noonan!
And the rest of the Revs are looking to finish 0-7 strong and get revved up for the playoffs. Get to Gillette Stadium as the Revs make their push for the playoffs in a third straight trip to MLS Cup. With a few pivotal regular season home games left, it's not too late for you to be a part of the action. Tickets for the rest of the season are on sale now and start at just $18, making Revolution Soccer a fun and affordable day for the whole family. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS or Ticketmaster at 617-931-2222 and get your ticks, get your kicks, and get the Revolution.
Get your kicks, the New England Revolution.
Hunger stands no chance against the new Bacon Lover Supreme Omelette Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Supreme Omelette Egg with crisp, thicker-cut pepper bacon and Colby Jack cheese. Hurry in today for a whole lot of sizzle, because this irresistible combination of flavor won't be around forever. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Dunkin' Donuts. America runs on Dunkin'. For a chance to win big, visit DunkinDonuts.com today to win great football prizes. Prizes include 42-inch plasma TVs, signed official game balls and JetBlue flights. And don't forget to try a Bacon Lover Supreme Omelette Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Price and participation may vary. No purchase necessary to enter to win. Offer valid 8/20 to 9/30. Must be 18 years or older to participate. Must be a U.S. citizen. Limited time offer. Visit DunkinDonuts.com for official rules and a chance to win.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Hour number two of Patriots Playbook. We're glad you're with us here on the program. Webradio at Patriots.com. Again, the email address. I'm John Rook, and I'm going to start talking a little bit about the Cleveland Browns at the present time, because the Browns are the team that are coming in at 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, and they're the latest team that's going to try to put a little bit of a break to the express that is the Patriots football season thus far. And Steve King covers the Browns, staff writer for ClevelandBrowns.com. He joins us here inside the playbook. Steve, thanks for taking a little time today. Appreciate it.
No problem. Glad to be with you guys.
First and foremost, this team at 2-2 coming in, is it a surprise they're 2-2?
Well, yes and no. They've kind of been hot and cold. Good one week, bad the next. It's kind of been a pendulum up and down. I think most people thought that they'd had a heck of a time beating Baltimore and Cincinnati, and then lo and behold, they beat both of them at home. And I think a lot of people thought they would beat the Oakland Raiders, and lo and behold, they lose on the last play on a blocked kick against the Raiders. So I think a lot of people had them pegged for about 1-3. I think they're very happy right now to be 2-2, especially considering the fact that after that nightmare opener against the Steelers, they came back and won two games in a division. They're now 2-1 in the division overall. They're 2-1 at home, and you know those two areas, the division play and the play at home, have been two real bugaboos for this team ever since they've been back. And now they're at least got their head above water for the time being, and they're real thrilled about that.
Sure. And on top of all of this, and this is where Patriots fans enter the equation, because obviously everybody around here is still very much a fan of what Romeo Crennel did with these Patriots defenses during his time he was here. Is Romeo, for the time being, off the hot seat, or does he remain on it for this entire year?
Well, you know, that's a great question. I think, you know, when you're 2-2 and let's be realistic. They're going to be prohibitive underdogs a Sunday, and it's going to take a Herculean effort for them to win. So let's say they lose that game. I think at the same time, I think as much as people would expect them to lose to New England, I think people would expect them to beat Miami the next week. So after that is their bye. So at the beginning of this season, if someone had given just about anybody, you know, hey, the Browns are going to be 3-3, will you take that? It'd be, where do I sign? And that's really realistically what they could be, and I think that's what they would be, and it would be great. And I think that, yeah, that takes it all, that takes him off of that for the time being. And you know, the Browns have insisted there's never been a Romeo watch, there's never been a, you know, a hot seat. Phil Savage came out very strongly and said that on any number of occasions. So, you know, for the time being, yeah, I think he's off of it. The last thing the Browns want to do right now is uproot everything and change everything again. They've been through that with Chris Palmer, you know, and Patriots fans know all about him. They've been with that with Butch Davis. And now that they've, you know, had an interim coach for five games, the last time the Patriots saw them at the end of the 2004 season, there was Terry Robiskie after, you know, Butch Davis had resigned. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the last thing they want to do is go through all this again. And they're going to really try to see if they can make this work, this team of Romeo Crennel and Phil Savage. And if they get to 3-3, the schedule kind of turns a little bit of a favor for them. And you look at it, and, I mean, you go through and you say win-loss, and that's the worst thing you can do. But just looking at it from that standpoint, it's a hard thing to resist. You can see them being 8-8 very realistically and without any stretch of the imagination. So if that happened, I think definitely he's off the hot seat if there ever was one.
To this point in time, though, let's kind of look at it this way. And by the way, I don't think it's any stretch, and I think I can speak for most Patriots fans when they say, you know, as long as he's not playing against his old team, Pats fans are rooting for Romeo Crennel to be successful, because they appreciate not only what he has done for them in building this franchise to the point where it is now, but everybody's of the opinion, here's a guy that should have gotten a chance to be a head coach a heck of a lot longer time ago than he got it. But now that he has the chance, in your estimation, has he been given enough time to start to turn this thing around, or is there going to be a little bit more patience that is going to be needed before the results come through that I think maybe ownership expects?
Well, I think, you know, obviously it's a bottom line business, and he's got to win. So you look at how many wins. I think if they came in and they went 7-9, or they even went 6-10, I think, you know, there's no question in my mind that he would stay. Now, if you're talking about 5-11, 4-12, that there might be a problem there. But I really don't think with this fast start and with all the young kids that they have, and now getting a little bit of a taste of winning, getting some confidence up, I really don't see that happening. So, you know, I think the bottom line is they wanted to give this whole regime 3 years to see what it could do. And now, after getting those two big, huge wins over Cincinnati in Baltimore, I think they, you know, I don't know that they've turned the corner, but they're certainly seem to be headed in the right direction. And if you get to 8-8, then yeah, I don't think there's any problem. But you know, cutting it off after 2 years, which is what they did with Chris Palmer, you know, everybody criticized that, and, you know, you got to give a guy 3 years, and well, this is the third year, and now finally you're seeing some signs that you know, this team is starting to become a solid team, that, you know, teams can't just write off and say, well, you know, we'll just throw our helmet out there and show up and win. Well, I don't think you can do that anymore against this team.
Yeah, sounds like it. Steve King, who covers the Browns for ClevelandBrowns.com, joining us here inside the Patriots playbook. All right, so let's kind of look at this team. I think we all realize, again, everybody wants Romeo to succeed, perhaps just not this Sunday, but we'll continue that conversation for another time. So will there ever be a quarterback controversy in Cleveland?
You know what? This is a city that, going back to the days of Otto Graham, believe it or not, had quarterback controversies. And for whatever reason, I know quarterback controversies are big in every city. For whatever reason, they're bigger here. And it certainly was raging after that that opener with Pittsburgh, when just everything went wrong, and they were crying for Brady Quinn. And it's kind of subsided a little bit here in the last couple weeks when Anderson has played pretty well, especially against Cincinnati and Baltimore. And you know, that's what the Browns would like. They would want to take this as far as they can with Anderson, and bring Brady along quietly and slowly or whatever. They don't want to force feed him. But at the same time, I think there will be times this year, and whenever that is, who knows? I can't believe it's going to be Sunday at New England against that defense, but again, who knows, that they're going to put Quinn in there, let him get his feet wet a little bit, and you know, kind of get used to the speed of the game. That's the way they did with Charlie Fry in 2005 toward the latter part of the year. They run him a series here and there, and then all of a sudden they started putting him in the lineup. Now, that was by the time he was playing, was a lost season. The thing that could mess that up this time is, let's say the Browns are 6-6, and you know, you look at, you know, 26 tiebreakers, and if all these things happen, the Browns are in the playoff race. Well, you know, it'd be hard to put a kid in at that point, but I still think at some point he's going to play a lot. How much depends on how much the team wins.
I guess most people want to know whether or not Brady Quinn would actually get any playing time, I would assume. Would you be surprised if he didn't get some playing time?
Oh, I absolutely would. I think there's almost a certainty, no matter what happens. You know, if Anderson looks like the second coming of Brian Sipe, and you know, the team just goes on a tremendous hot strike, I think even then, at some point, Brady Quinn plays. And you know, they didn't trade next year's number one draft choice and, you know, make this, you know, monumental move back up into the first round to take this kid so he can stand there wearing a ball cap and a, you know, holding a clipboard on the sidelines with a, you know, a nice pristine white uniform. They got him to play. He's the quarterback of the future. And you know, Anderson has a say on, you know, how quickly that future arrives. But, you know, they're going to play him at some point this year. I think that's almost a certainty. Again, and how much depends on Anderson. If Anderson starts struggling, then it's going to be a lot, and it's going to be right away. But if Anderson plays well, I mean, he's going to hold that off a little bit. You know, these people here, they want to win. It's been a long time coming back, a long, hard road, and they want to win first and foremost. But at the same time, you know, everybody realizes that number 10 is the future of this franchise as far as the quarterback position is concerned. So he's going to get playing time. There's no question about that.
Is there any expectation, Steve, that he take over the starting job before the end of this season?
Oh, that could happen. It could definitely happen. If this team would struggle, you know, get back into some bad habits it had in previous years, and if Anderson struggles, then yeah, that could definitely happen. I mean, it could happen within a blink of an eye at some point. You know, if both of those things happen, now, if one of them happens, then it is a possibility. If neither of them happens, then again, you're going to go back to just a, you know, a little bit here, a little bit there. But yeah, if this team is, you know, 4-10, 3-10 at some point, and Anderson's struggling, then probably even before that, then the number 10 is going to be the guy, and they're going to put him in there and just say, hey, you know, go in there, do what you can, and let's get this building process started with you.
Okay, fair enough. Now, I know that offensively there's a couple of parts of this team that the Patriots fans aren't as familiar with, and certainly the Patriots as a team aren't as familiar with, that I'm sure they're going to spend some time worrying about. Number one is Jamal Lewis. It's not that they don't know Jamal, but Jamal in a Cleveland uniform is different, and he certainly looks to be somewhat rejuvenated. And I know he's been banged up a little bit, but Kellen Winslow had started the year off in a pretty strong fashion, but how dinged up is Kellen for Sunday?
Well, you know, he played last Sunday with a shoulder that he had hurt the previous week, and he didn't practice that last week, Wednesday and Thursday, and there was a real question whether he was going to play or not. He did, and he played very well. So I think the thing is still tender, but this is a kid that, no matter what the national perception of him is, he wants to win. He's a good, solid individual, and I mean, he's tough. He wants to play. I don't think there's any question that he'll play Sunday, and unless he dings that thing up again, I look for him to go the distance. You know, he's kind of what Ozzie Newsome was to this team, 30 years ago. He's a wide receiver in a tight end's body. He really is one of the keys to this team, if not the key key to the offense in the way they line him up. And fans Sunday will see he'll line up sometimes in the backfield. He'll line up as a regular tight end. He'll line up in a slot. He'll line up as a wide receiver. He'll go in motion. He'll be doing all kinds of things. And wherever he lines up, as good as the Patriots are, they've got to identify him because he's a guy who's a tremendous matchup problem mm-hmm. because he's too fast for linebackers to stay with, and he's too strong and too tall for cornerbacks to on those deep routes. So, I mean, he's a guy that you probably want to put two hats on, and if they do that, then it's up to Anderson to find where the opening is.
Exactly. And then Jamal Lewis's play overall seems to be somewhat rejuvenated and maybe mildly surprising to those outside of Cleveland. What about inside Cleveland? Is his play somewhat surprising?
No, I don't think, because you saw him, and I mean, obviously when they signed him, there were some real questions. Is he washed up? Does he have anything left? Because you saw in Baltimore that, you know, the kind of the slowing down of his career, the slowing down of his foot speed, his move seemed a little more, calculated as opposed to spontaneous. And, there were some real questions whether, you know, this guy would come and, be a flop, or whether he would come and look like the Jamal Lewis of old. Well, along through the mini camps and through the first part of training camp, it became pretty clear that this guy had regained a lot of the form he had. He lost weight, regained some of the speed he had with the Ravens early part of his career. He had a real focus. And, you know, we look at everything physically, but a lot of times with these guys, it's what's in their heart and in their head that really determines things. And he felt that the Ravens had wrongly given up on him, and he wanted to go out and prove, and he heard all the talk, and he wanted to go out and prove that, yes, he still had a lot left in the gas tank. So he's come out, and he's been a tremendous surprise, and I don't think it's been a surprise really to the people who've watched him in training camp, because you could see that happening then. But obviously it's a surprise to people around the league, because, you know, the life expectancy of running backs in today's game is not long, and he had been there 7 years, and you wondered whether, you know, he had just more or less run a course of his career. Well, he's got a real spring in his step, and Sunday the fans will see a Jamal Lewis that much more resembles the guy early in his career in Baltimore as opposed to the one in the last couple of years.
I guess it really shouldn't come as a surprise that he had that spring in his step, as you described, against Baltimore, because he wanted to show the Ravens a little something. But, I mean, there are a couple of other former Ravens players, not the least of which is Anderson, that probably had a little something to prove last week. And I would assume would have had at least a small factor in that 27-13 win. I have to admit, Steve, I was surprised to see that result, pleasantly so, but it tells me that Cleveland may have something going in the right direction here.
Well, they had talked. I think everyone was surprised the way the game played out, especially the way it started, because they had talked all week long. They had started so poorly the week before against Oakland, and Oakland is, you know, they're improved, but it's not a real good team, and they had just come out and just, you know, did a real sleepwalking act and got behind 16-0 and scrambled to get back in the game, and then they had a chance to win at the end when the field goal was blocked. So they talked about coming out and starting fast and keeping it up. Well, you look, and it's 27-6 they're ahead. I don't think anyone imagined that. They were ahead 14-0 in a blink of an eye. And that is really the key for this team. You got a lot of young players, and when you're playing a team like a Baltimore, like a New England, like a Pittsburgh, to get up early and let these young guys get some confidence. And I'm sure that's the game plan for Sunday, is try to you know, hit the Patriots early, get up 7-0, and try to, you know, play from that standpoint and get these kids some confidence. But that has been the mantra ever since that game, and I think it'll be continued throughout the rest of the season, because this is a team that if it plays hard, brings its lunch pail and, you know, rolls up its sleeves and goes to work, then it has a chance to play with any team on its schedule. But it is, by no stretch of the imagination, good enough just to show up and roll their hats out there and just say, hey, here we are, and you know, lay down for us. And, you know, they're not the Patriots. They're not the Indianapolis Colts. Those teams can afford to have, a couple, semi-off days. The Browns can't. And I think that Oakland game kind of proved that to them.
I would assume as well that, like many other teams in this league, having to figure out how to slow the Patriots down will be certainly on the front burner for the Browns this week. Defensively speaking, I know that Bodden had a pick this last week, and you got good play from the special teams in the win over Baltimore. What overall has been the biggest surprise or the best surprise defensively, and what has been largely unexpected in terms of development for that unit thus far?
Well, I think maybe the biggest surprise has been the play of a couple of the young linebackers. Antoine Peake came over from the Houston Texans, where he had played under Todd Grantham when they were both there. And Todd Grantham, of course, is the Browns defensive coordinator now. He has looked very good. DeQuell Jackson inside has looked very good. Leon Williams has looked very good. And, of course, Cameron Wimbley, who set a rookie club record for sacks last year with 11. He has continued his progression. So they've got a good young core of linebackers, and I think the development of Peake added in with that, and Leon Williams has been a real nice surprise for the Browns. Now, the disappointing part has been the play of the defensive line, and just teams have been running it well on them. And you've got some guys banged up. Orpheus Roy has a bad knee. Ted Washington seems like, he may have really slowed down, and maybe the end of that career has finally come. They've got some other, issues, with some backup players, and just not a lot of depth there. And it's the one area of the team that, Phil Savage, the general manager, has admitted we've just not had a chance to attack that point yet, and that's next on the agenda. Well, until it gets to the next off season, they're basically going to have to live with what they have, and try to outscore teams, which is kind of strange to say, because in the previous 8 years of these new Browns, you were watching, it was like Groundhog Day. You were watching the same game over and over. The defense on almost every game would give this team a legitimate chance to win. It would play hard. It would keep teams out of the end zone, and it would. It would do its job, and the offense on most occasions didn't do its job. And so if they lost a lot of games, 13-9, 20-12, things like that. They just couldn't make enough plays offensively. Well, here it is, 2007, and the defense is giving up points and yards in bunches. Maybe not so many points last week, but yards in bunches. Teams are running on them. A lot of teams are passing on them. But at the same time, the Browns are moving the ball offensively. So, the games have become a lot more exciting. They're 27-24, they're 30-27, things like that, and the Browns win now. Their mode of winning is to outscore teams, whereas before they had to hope that they could win the game 10-7, and it's kind of been a fun metamorphosis for the fans. And they'd like to fix that defense, they'd like to get that line fixed, but there's just really not a whole lot they can do until the offseason.
Sure, understood. The other thing that I've noticed this week, and has flown largely under the radar, is the fact that you guys have also had a player that's coming back from a suspension because of taking a banned substance, in Ryan Tucker, who's returned. Yeah. What's his prognosis for playing time?
Well, I don't know that he'll suit up this week. He's just come back, and I think, I talked to him in the locker room today, and he said it would take him a good week to get his football legs back underneath him. So I would find it highly unusual if he would suit up Sunday. I think he would probably suit up the following week against Miami. Then they've got to bye, and that would give him another week. But he up until this suspension, had been their best offensive lineman overall from 2002, when he first came here from the Rams, through 2006. Solid, big guy, came to play. Ran into some mental health issues at the end of last year, missed the last part of that, and then had this substance abuse thing come this year. So it's kind of been two, problems right back to back. Highly unlike this guy. So he's anxious to get back, and when he does, it's going to make that offensive line just that much better. And you talk about the bugaboos of this team. Offensive line was right at the top of the charts. They have struggled to put a decent offensive line out on the field ever since they've been back, and this year they really have done it. They used the first round draft choice, number 3 overall, and getting Joe Thomas, went out and got Eric Steinbach in free agency, got a guy that I know Patriots fans are familiar with from Miami Dolphins, Seth McKinney. He's at right guard. Re-signed Hank Fraley. So this line all of a sudden has gotten a lot better, and since the middle of the second quarter of the opener, that was against Pittsburgh there, since the middle of the second quarter of that game, they have permitted only 2 sacks. Wow. And so they have done a tremendous job. They're opening up some holes in the running game for Jamal Lewis. This is really the best offensive line, at least through four games, that this team has had probably going back into the late 80s with Bernie Kosar.
That's always good to know. Let me then get your final thoughts then, Steve, on a couple of fronts. Number one, what you feel like is the best overall part of this football team? What's the strength that the Cleveland Browns will bring in on Sunday, number one? And number two, as you kind of look at this thing, and I'm sure you'll look at it a little bit more between now and Sunday, but what do the Browns have to do in order to, you know, basically try to steal one on the road, do you think?
Well, I'll answer the first question first.
Okay.
The thing that they have going for them, actually twofold, is their offense. I mean, there's their ability to score some points. They have some big receivers, and I know Cincinnati has some big receivers, but they have, with Winslow, Joe Jurevicius, and Braylon Edwards, they have some big athletic guys that can go up and get the ball. And against smaller cornerbacks, that's a real matchup problem. They have the ability with Jamal Lewis to run the ball. And Derek Anderson is a streaky quarterback. He's like the little girl with the curl. He can be very good or very bad. And when he's good, he's very good. And when he's bad, he's very bad. If he gets to the point where he gets into a hot streak, he can kind of carry you for a while. But he's been up and down, and you don't know what you're going to get. The other thing that's really helped them has been Joshua Cribbs. Their fans will see him Sunday. He's learning to be a punt returner. He already is a very outstanding kickoff returner, a kid who had been a kind of a slash-style quarterback just down the road here at Kent State, came in as a rookie free agent, a little chance to make the team. Not only did he make the team as a wide receiver, but right from the get-go in 2005, he became an accomplished kick returner, and usually he gets one long kickoff return every game. So that's done great. He's done a great job of setting up field position. As mm-hmm. for beating the Patriots, you really got to hope for two things. You've got to play your best game, and you've got to hope they don't play their best game. And if that happens, you got a chance. But I think to be more specific, as I mentioned earlier, the Browns got to come out, and they've got to get points on the board early to get some confidence. This is, this isn't a team that I don't think is going to be able to get behind and let the crowd get into it and let Bill Belichick scheme his defense and rush people. And I don't think this is the kind of team that is going to be able to withstand that. This is a team that's going to have to get up early and get some confidence. It's a young team, and he kind of wavers in the first part of games. And they play well, they get confidence. They don't play well, they kind of are a little bit shaky. So I think getting off to that good start, like they did against Baltimore. Now, you can get off 14-0 against a team like the Patriots, probably not. But if you can get a score, maybe add a field goal or two before the half, get up in the mid-teens by halftime, and then you've got a fighting chance to at least take the game into the fourth quarter and have a chance to win it. You know, you're playing in the New England Patriots, which to me is by far the best team in the league. I think that's all you can ask for.
I would say that's a pretty fair assessment, and certainly something I think that a lot of teams will be looking at, and that's exactly how I think we would look at playing the Patriots. You just got to keep it close and hope that somebody shoots themselves in the foot, but that's really kind of how you have to look at it right now because they have it kind of going on all cylinders. Steve King, covering the Browns for ClevelandBrowns.com. Steve, thanks for spending some time with us today. Sure appreciate the insight, and we'll look forward to seeing you here on Sunday.
Okay, my friend. Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Our pleasure. Thank you very much. Once again, Steve King from ClevelandBrowns.com. You can check out all their updated news at ClevelandBrowns.com, and a lot of his articles from not only the win over the Baltimore Ravens, which might have been somewhat unexpected from last weekend, 27-13, but the latest injury stuff as well. They've got some stuff in there today about Kellen Winslow and the like, so you might want to check that out. All right, let's sneak in another timeout here, and then we'll come back. We've got to finish up with some emails and let you hear Patriots head coach Bill Belichick, all inside the playbook.
Your New England Revolution have been one of the hottest teams in Major League Soccer all season long. Summer may have turned to fall, but the soccer action is still hot at Gillette Stadium. Taylor Twellman.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pat Noonan.
Shot, and it's in! Patrick Noonan!
And the rest of the Revs are looking to finish 0-7 strong and get revved up for the playoffs. Get to Gillette Stadium as the Revs make their push for the playoffs in a third straight trip to MLS Cup. With a few pivotal regular season home games left, it's not too late for you to be a part of the action. Tickets for the rest of the season are on sale now and start at just $18, making Revolution Soccer a fun and affordable day for the whole family. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS or Ticketmaster at 617 617-
877-931-2222 and get your ticks, get your kicks, and get the revolution.
Get your kicks, the New England Revolution.
Hunger stands no chance against the new Bacon Lover Supreme Omelette Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Supreme Omelette Egg with crisp, thicker-cut pepper bacon and Colby Jack cheese. Hurry in today for a whole lot of sizzle, because this irresistible combination of flavor won't be around forever. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Dunkin' Donuts. America runs on Dunkin'. For a chance to win big, visit DunkinDonuts.com today to win great football prizes. Prizes include 42-inch plasma TVs, signed official game balls and JetBlue flights. And don't forget to try a Bacon Lover Supreme Omelette Breakfast Sandwich from Dunkin' Donuts. Price and participation may vary. No purchase necessary to enter to win. Offer valid 8/20 to 9/30. Must be 18 years or older to participate. Must be a U.S. citizen. Limited time offer. Visit DunkinDonuts.com for official rules and a chance to win.
When you've got a lineman-sized hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
All right, Jimmy, it's the big day, and we gotta go. Patriots kick off in an hour. Let's make sure we got everything.
All right, let's see. Face paint.
Check.
Helmets.
Check.
Foam fingers.
Check.
Jerseys.
Check.
Checks.
Check.
Check card.
Check.
That's everything.
Let's go, Pats!
Woo!
Let's go, Pats! Let's go, Pats! Let's go!
Check, check, check. That's right. If you really are a true Patriots fan, then you need to open a New England Patriots checking account from Bank of America today. You'll get checks, check cards, and even bank statements, all with the official New England Patriots logo. Bank of America is the official bank of the New England Patriots. So take advantage of this opportunity to make every day game day.
Let's go, Pats! Woo!
And sign up for a New England Patriots checking account today. Bank of America. Bank of Opportunity.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. New England Patriots trademarks, including the Patriots logo, are the property of New England Patriots L.P. and are used pursuant to a licensing agreement with New England Patriots L.P. 2007 Bank of America Corporation. All rights reserved.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Your New England Revolution have been one of the hottest teams in Major League Soccer all season long. Summer may have turned to fall, but the soccer action is still hot at Gillette Stadium. Taylor Twellman.
What a goal! Taylor Twellman!
Pat Noonan.
Shot, and it's in! Patrick Noonan!
And the rest of the Revs are looking to finish 0-7 strong and get revved up for the playoffs. Get to Gillette Stadium as the Revs make their push for the playoffs in a third straight trip to MLS Cup. With a few pivotal regular season home games left, it's not too late for you to be a part of the action. Tickets for the rest of the season are on sale now and start at just $18, making Revolution Soccer a fun and affordable day for the whole family. Call the Revolution Ticket Office today at 1-877-GET-REVS or Ticketmaster at 617-931-2222 and get your ticks, get your kicks, and get the revolution.
Get your kicks, the New England Revolution.
Welcome back inside the playbook. John Rook here with you on a Wednesday as the Pats recoup from the 34-13 win at Cincinnati in Monday Night Football. And get ready now for the other Ohio team. Got to win the Ohio State Championship this weekend by, there you go, WKRP. But they were broadcasting that game on Sunday or Monday night, huh? Ohio State champions. Try to play the Cleveland Browns here on Sunday. All right, let's continue with some emails. We'll get to Patriots head coach Bill Belichick here shortly as well to wrap up the program. And we'll have Romeo Crennel and running back Jamal Lewis from the Browns coming up on Thursday's program, tomorrow's program, along with, of course, Russell Baxter from ESPN, their NFL research coordinator.
Baxter!
Thank you. He'll be here, as always. Russell will be with us. We'll hit the Pats and the Browns and certainly talk about possibility for 16-week regular season dominance and then take a look around week five at some of the other key matchups around the NFL for coming up this weekend. So we'll get you all set for another football weekend. That's the beauty of an off week, by the way. Of a short week. The beauty of a short week is that it's a day shorter till we get the play football again. One less day to have to sit and wait and just talk about it. We're one day closer to playing the game again. That's the beauty of the short week. Of course, we're probably the only ones that look at that. The players down the hallway are like, oh my God, we got to play again in 5 days, 4 days, 3 days. No time to recoup. Jim in New Jersey wrote, one of the surprising highlights of the game against the Bengals, I thought, was the play of Merriweather. I saw him have a few good hits in special teams and some nice plays playing defense, including a pretty impressive open field tackle. Also, it didn't make any national news that I saw, but Jimmy Johnson was on Mike and the Mad Dog here in New York, and they asked him about the defensive signal taping, and he thought it was ridiculous, saying how 16 years ago people were doing that in the league, and it was nothing new. Even funnier was when Chris Russo asked him if he thought it went too far using video equipment, and would he do it, and his response was, no, I did do it using video equipment. Everyone did it. He just thought it was Bills continuing to do it after the memo was issued. That was the problem. Bingo! I got bingo! It's exactly what it was.
Bingo! Bingo! I got bingo!
Thank you, Troy. That's exactly what it was. Fact is that, yeah, they continued to do it after the league sent the memo down and had the Patriots stopped, and that's where the whole arrogance thing comes into play. Well, we've gone over this, all right? It's kind of water under the bridge now, but, you know, it's interesting to note that a guy like Jimmy Johnson confirms pretty much what we all around here already believe about the entire issue and the entire incident and the fact that other people not only were thought to have done it, but did do it and admitted doing it. Gabe says again, I actually thought the play, talking about the backwards pass in Seymour, play was a backwards pass which should have been called a lateral, which if touched by a defensive lineman should have made Mankins eligible to catch it. Well, they're talking about the ball that was batted up in the air that Logan caught, and then the penalty was called for illegal touching. I don't think it was. I don't think it was a backwards pass. What it was, I think, was a fumble, because I don't think Brady's arm ever went forward on the play, at least by my recollection of the replay that I saw. So I always thought that, you know, illegal touching was the incorrect call, because it should have been just a fumble recovery, and he merely downed the football. He killed the play. He did what he was supposed to do. He didn't, like, fall on it so guys could jump on top of him and try to loosen the ball from the pileup he was in. He simply just downed it. He went down on a knee and downed it like he was returning a kick. That was the right play for Logan Mankins to make. He says, what did Chad Johnson say to Bill when he went over to him on the sideline, and what in turn did Bill say?
It is what it is.
Yeah, probably. Well, I know that Coach Belichick had some good things to say about Chad Johnson after coaching him in the Pro Bowl in Hawaii last year, so I'm sure it has to stem with that relationship, or maybe it's kind of like, hey, when you need a new receiver, come find me. He says, finally, when is Seymour scheduled to come back, and who would be cut to make room for him? I don't think he better be cut. You'll probably see somebody get, you know, if you have to deactivate somebody, you probably see somebody get IR'd more than you see somebody get cut. You know, Mike Wright just came back into play this last weekend. That would be my guess, you know, for diminished playing time. But again, let's wait and see how the process plays out over the next couple of weeks, because we got 2 more weeks to go before he's even eligible to come back. And then the Patriots have 2 weeks to decide what to do with. They get 2 weeks grace period here. Okay, they get a couple of weeks to decide what to do with the roster. So they get a bonus, a roster exemption, if you will, for a couple of weeks before they need to pull the trigger. So you're really looking at a month from right now before they have to make a decision on who would go when Richard Seymour comes back. So that's
Good stuff there, Gabe. Thank you for the email. Let's continue here. And let's go here. All right. Pardon me. I have to a little antiquated email system here. This one comes from Alan Valdosta. Hey, nice to hear from you. Alan Valdosta, Georgia. He says, now Camp Afrijan in Kuwait. Wow. He says, listening to you, John, this year from the Middle East, where my National Guard unit has been sent. We're based in Kuwait, but run missions in and out of Iraq. Is whack, he says, all the time. God bless you, Al, and please stay safe. And thank you very much for taking the time to listen and send us a note. And I hope that you, whenever you have a chance to do so, send us the email and let us know how you're doing and what's going on over there. Al says, it's hard to keep up with the Pats to the same degree as in years past. This week's Monday night game with the Bengals is the first game I saw other than highlights, but still, I agree, this is the most dominant bunch we have had. If you go back to the 70s, there were certain games the Pats would dominate. When we had that great offensive line and were matched up against a team that had trouble stopping the run, we'd blow teams out. But this group seems to have all the answers, and as you mentioned, we don't have Seymour and Harrison. I cannot predict 16-0. I really do not care. I just want the best record in the AFC, whatever that proves to be. Interesting. And Al, once again, thank you, thank you, thank you for writing us from Kuwait. Please be safe. Godspeed to you and your fellow guardsmen. And I hope that we will hear from you again whenever you get the chance. Best part about it is, Al, is if you've got your MP3 player, download us on podcast, right? And then if you get the chance to send us an email, send it on anyway. We'll read it. Thanks for sending the note. Al is one of our show regulars from several years gone by here inside the Playbook, as well as Patriots.com radio, as long as we've been doing this here. Let's see. All right, here we go. Gabe, once again. Wow, Gabe, busy today. You know, Gabe hasn't been with us all year long, and all of a sudden, bang, got to make up for lost time here. John, I won't take up too much of your time, so I have three things. Number one, special teams. I guess we're talking about nitpicking here. Number one, one extra point blocked, but it was good anyway, and almost a second blocked. Okay, I'll buy that. Number two, on the three wide receiver, one running back, one halfback sets, three of them on the 62 plays run, they all failed. Two incomplete passes and an interception. You know what, Gabe? I don't think I'd really considered that, of the three wide out set. That's, you know, that's actually okay. That's pretty good. So, obviously, that's a certain formation and a certain scheme that the Patriots have to work on. And number three, he says, having the tight ends block more to help the line instead of being utilized more on screens and short passes over the middle. Well, I won't agree with that one quite as much because the line really hasn't as much needed the help. And I think we all realize that having the safeties underneath, or having, you know, the running backs or the tight ends as underneath safeties, you know, in dump-off routes, has certainly been a large reason for some of the pass percentage success that Brady has had thus far. Gabe says, other than that, I love where this team is headed so far. All right. Good stuff, Gabe. Brought good stuff to the table. You're welcome to come back. If you want to kind of spread it out over a couple of days next time, that's fine. But, hey, we're glad to have you. Patrick in Beverly, Mass. I like your show because you actually focus on football. Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. Thank you. Here are some areas in which I think the Patriots can improve. I had to think about this because they have few weaknesses. Says one, kickoff returns. The D-back who returns kickoffs is undeniably talented. I believe that's Ellis Hobbs you're referring to. But I don't want him back there with the game in the balance or when we're about to ice the game. I suspect he's been talked to, but he seems awfully arrogant. I'd like to see the Pats pull him from returns in certain circumstances until he learns it's a team game. Well, the Patriots put him back there because they know he's a threat to go all the way when he touches the ball. And, you know, he likes to run the ball because that's what he's paid to do. My guess would be if the Patriots were really concerned about it, that you wouldn't see him out there. So the more you see him out there means the less concerned the Patriots are. Does that make sense? He says, number two, Merriweather, the new number one pick at safety and D-back looks very talented but should have gotten a 15-year penalty on the late hit or out of bounds. Was borderline on not quitting in time on the nice play he made behind the line. How can you trust a talented guy like him who knows bad or shows bad judgment in the clinch? Well, whether he should have gotten it or not is beside the point. He didn't get it. Was it borderline? Absolutely. But I think the Patriots like the fact that he's in there and he's aggressive, and for the short time that he's on the field, he's trying to make a play. Believe you me, if he ever makes a play that results in a big penalty, he'll get a talking to. So, you know, he pushed the envelope, yes, but he didn't get burnt just yet. Number three, Patrick says, both the punter and the kicker in field goals, not kickoffs, seem shaky. What will they do under extreme pressure? You know, to me, I think that's the other big nitpick right here is that, you know, I think we're still shaky in the punting game overall.
I don't know that, you know, that it really should matter much with Chris Hansen because he is an expert. One of the things he did last year was amongst the league leaders in getting punts inside the opponent's 20-yard line, and I think that's what the Patriots were really looking for when they picked him up off of waivers before the regular season started. But I think you'd also like to see hang time more so than distance. So whether or not he's averaging 36, 38 yards per punt is really not the problem as long as he's getting high enough hang time. If he's getting the hang time, I think you'll see the Patriots be fairly satisfied. As far as Gostkowski, well, you know, he's 19 for 19 in extra points. He's missed one field goal. Does he seem still a little shaky? Yeah, I think that's only going to come with time, guys. He says, we're a bit thin at running back. Got to love Sammy Morris, but who steps up behind him? I think running back is a much more difficult role nowadays. Well, that's true. That's why they went and got Kyle Eckel and signed him and ended up waiving Corey Mays. Number five, next year will be the most challenging Belichick and Pioli have faced. This team is going to get raided. Some stalwarts are going to retire. Can the Pats continue to compete at a high level as Kraft has always wanted? Next year is next year, Patrick. And the answer to that is have no reason to believe that they won't be able to compete based on what we've seen on the track record thus far. All right, here we go. Andy says, gang, I think Bill B and you guys should bring up the cheating scandal at any time when it seems the team is getting complacent at all. Okay. Cheaters. Team's getting complacent. Cheaters. Yeah, that'll snap them right out of it, right? Good job, Andy. Good job. Let's see. Craig says, John, usually the Pats, like all teams, play better at home than on the road. I haven't seen any appreciable drop-off in any area this year. Can you think of any aspect of the game we're doing better at home than on the road so far? Craig, that's actually a good question. And actually, no. In fact, I'd go the other way. I'd say they actually seem to be doing better on the road simply because their concentration factor, I think, is better on the road than it is at home. I think they have an easier time getting distracted at home because of the creature comforts of home, period. I think it's up to the fans, and I think, you know, to build up the energy inside the stadium before the game to where you kind of get that whole mojo thing going, and you kind of get that electricity going, and you don't allow the complacency to set in. I think it's easier for these guys to get juiced up on the road simply because, you know, the fans are all booing them, and the fans are cheering for their other team, and they're trying to get, you know, teams like the Bengals involved. So I think this is where home field advantage can certainly help the Patriots keep from being somewhat complacent. Andy in Vermont, more than the Patriots want to win, I think it's more the fact they hate to lose. What a show of domination in Cincinnati. When I saw Macho Stinko and Carson Arwood Palmer fighting amongst themselves after Asante picked that pass at the end of the half, I knew they were in the heads of the Bengals, and they were more worried about the Patriots than themselves. Like you said, worry about yourself, not the other team. Nitpicking? How come they only scored 34? Good point, Andy. You want to nitpick? How can you score only 34 when you get 38 against the other three teams you played? Of course, the positive aspect is that you know, they haven't won by less than 21 points this far. 21-point margin of victory against the Bengals was the closest anybody stayed to them this year. Yikes. Good stuff, Andy. This one comes... doesn't say. We didn't sign this one. Oh, Jason. Okay, this is from Jason, who doesn't say where he's writing from, but he says, I'm very concerned about the fragility of Maroney. Morris did well against a terrible run defense team. Luckily, the Pats passed to set up the run instead of vice versa. I hope Morris continues with his good play, but I'm not 100% sold yet. In my opinion, Maroney better start showing he's a tough player, not just a funny guy. And I don't mean to get down on the guy, but I'm beginning to seriously doubt his toughness. I brought that up at the very top of the show, Jason, and I think that's a legitimate concern right now. But maybe not toughness. Maybe that's not the right adjective we're looking for here. I think it may be durability. I think there's a difference between the two terms. I don't know that he's a durable back. I'm also concerned, Jason says, with the cheap shot that Merriweather took in the game Monday night. He's already suspect for his past history. Let's hope he cleans up his act. Well, again, you know, no harm, no foul. It's not to say it was the right thing to do, but I think the kid's just trying to make a play. He's not out there all that often. He's trying to make a play and leave an impression. I'm sure that somebody said something to him. The Colts are getting banged up now. Let's see them deal with some injuries like the Pats have year in and year out. Okay, Jason, thank you for the email. Squeeze in a couple of more here before we get off to Coach Belichick. This one comes from Prince
in Virginia, who says, I can see an improvement in Ellis Hobbs. He seems to be getting better each game. The guy's playing the ball like Samuels did last year. Randall Gay also looks better than the third DB. These slot receivers just can't get a step on him. And the new guy, Merriweather, is going to be a matchup problem for offenses. He's as quick as slot receivers, physical as a hard-hitting safety, and faster than most cover safeties, he says. It's only a matter of time before he learns the defense. This guy can match up with anybody. That's why I wouldn't be surprised at some point if Merriweather did get time at corner, if the need ever arises, because I think he has the ability to do that. That's a good point, Prince. And then this one comes from Jason in Jay in Panama City, Florida. I'm very concerned about the fragility of Maroney. This is the other one. He just resent it with his name. Thank you, Jay. Okay, appreciate that. Jay in Panama City, Florida, talking about Maroney's fragility. And as I suggested, I think that that's a legitimate concern right now. But again, we're being very nitpicky here, kids, and that's what we do.
Fragile.
Yeah, fragile.
That must be Italian.
Fragile is right. How fragile is he? Well, fortunately, we've had Sammy Morris pick up the slack. We've had Kevin Falk pick up the slack. We even had Kyle Echols get into the game and pick up the slack in the end of the game. And again, we're nitpicking here. There's not too much that's really wrong, but that's what we'll do usually on the first program after a game. If the Patriots win this thing, that's what we'll do. We'll nitpick and see if we can't find some areas just to kind of stay on target, stay on schedule, as Jaws likes to say, right? All right, tomorrow's program, yet again, we'll hear from Romeo Crennel and Jamal Lewis of the Cleveland Browns. Russell Baxter from ESPN, NFL Research Coordinator, will join us, generally speaking, toward the tail end of the first hour.
Baxter!
He'll be with us around 2:45-ish Eastern time tomorrow. We'll wrap up today's program with Patriots head coach Bill Belichick.
Okay, well, we're working on a little bit of a short week here, which is going to be a problem because Cleveland presents a lot of them for us. We've got a lot of stuff to get ready for here. You know, this is a team that, we're really not very familiar with. Haven't played them in a while, and they've had a lot of turnover there since the last time we did play them. I think there's only about 9 players left from the 0-4 team. So a lot of new faces, but it's a good team. It's a very explosive team. I think they've gotten better each week, especially on the defensive side of the ball. I thought they played very well last week against Baltimore. Willie was back in there. He made some plays. He certainly gave him presence there on the edge like he always does, like we know he can. And they're a good, strong defensive team, very fundamentally sound. Defensive backs play well. They play a lot of tight man-to-man coverage, and that'll be a challenge for us in the passing game, blocking Wembley and Peak and McGinnis, the outside linebackers, and handling all their blitz package and all that. That'll be a challenge for us too. They're a field goal away from being 3-1, and offensively they can move the ball and they can score a lot of points. They can run it. They can throw it. They got a good offensive line. Quarterbacks played well. They got big play receivers in Winslow and Edwards and Carter, and they can get the ball down the field and they run it well. They really only have one running back, other than Lewis. Nobody has very many carries, but he gets it a lot and he runs hard, and he's certainly a force to be dealt with there. And I think one of the most impressive players that I've seen in a while is this Cribbs. He's we faced a lot of good kickoff returners, starting with Justin Miller and, McGee and Sproles and, going right down the line. And this guy's really good. He's got him every week, punts and kickoff returns. He also plays for him on the coverage teams, and they use him some kind of like the Jets use Brad Smith as a quarterback, kind of a specialty guy on offense for some, gadget plays and formations and stuff like that. But he's a pretty impressive player. He's a very good returner, a big threat whenever he gets the ball. So, this is the kind of team that can strike in a hurry. Last week they had a 80-yard touchdown against Baltimore. Cribbs had a 95-yard kickoff return against Oakland. Winslow had a 50-yarder last week. So they can get the ball down the field in a hurry, lead the league or second in the league at fumbles, whatever it is. They cause a lot of them. They recover a lot of them. They turn the ball over, so taking care of the ball and preventing big plays on defense and in the kicking game is certainly going to be a big focus for us this week and an important part of the game. So those are some of the things that we got to work on, and we got a lot of work to do. But we've started the process. We're underway. Well, we have a one-week roster exemption with him, and we'll take it day to day.
Will he be out there today, and can you talk about just sort of the plan integrating him back into the mix?
Yeah, he'll definitely be out there. We'll take it day to day. We'll let him, we'll do some stuff with him, see how it looks, evaluate it, go to tomorrow, take it one day at a time. I think our, again, it's all team defense. So, I think the secondaries, they've had their moments. They've had a lot of good plays. There's some plays that could have been better. We've had some pass rush. Sometimes we didn't have enough. I put too much stress on the secondary. So, that's the way it always is. There's things we've done well. And times we've done things well in pass coverage. There's other times that, it could be better. I think we could play better situational football defensively all the way around. Short yardage, goal line, third down, red area, all that. So there's plenty of room for improvement. But, we'll face a huge challenge this week. I mean, they got an outstanding tight end in the passing game. They got an outstanding receiver in the passing game. And they got, they got a bunch of other guys like Jarvis and Carter and Hayden and guys like that who are, they're good players too. You can't neglect them. But you certainly got to focus on, the two big guns. An athletic quarterback who rolls out of the pocket and, can hurt you with his legs, on third down conversions and in the red area and things like that. So, it's easy to see why they're scoring a lot of points. So they do a lot of things well, and it'll be a big challenge for our secondary. So that's really what we got to focus on is what's ahead, not what's behind us.
Would you say James Sanders has filled in admirably in Rodney's absence?
I think James has been a consistent player for us from, about the middle of last year, and he got quite a bit of playing time last year, and he's gotten playing time this year, both in the preseason and regular season. He's done a good job. Well, those players all play multiple positions. When you go to a game with seven offensive linemen, then you have to have, guys play more than one spot. You can't have a backup for each of those positions. So, you have three tackles. Somebody's got to play two spots. And if you have four inside guys, then you got to double up somewhere. And so that's the way we practice. We use them in different spots. Logan and Dan and Steve don't move a lot, but the other guys all move, as necessary.
So Rusty's time, like the past few weeks, at center is more practice.
Sure. Absolutely. Center, left guard, right guard. Bill Yates, same thing.
Mm-hmm. So from your experience, when you get a team like Cleveland that has not experienced a lot of success, and now they're starting to get some success, Does that make them a little bit more dangerous?
Well, I think they have good confidence there. I think they're playing with good level of confidence, and I think they're dangerous. I think they've been dangerous. I think Cincinnati, we saw that game. They hung up 51 points, and it could have been more than that too. It really could have been more than that. And I think defensively what they did against the Ravens last week. I think they played better on defense each week from the Pittsburgh game. Cincinnati, Oakland, then Baltimore. I think it's, that they played well, a little bit better each week. And like I said, I think getting Willie back, certainly that helps them. And I think that they're gaining confidence. They're good in the kicking game. They're a very explosive team. They can score from anywhere on the field. They turn the ball over. And they got a great return game, so it doesn't take much. It's one play, and it could be, a 99-yard kickoff return. It could be a strip sack, like the first play of the Oakland game when Wembley got him. It could be a 60-yard Jamal Lewis run. It could be a 80-yard Braylon Edwards pass. It could be a 60-yard Kellen Winslow pass. It, you know, they can score. They can score from any place on the field in any aspect of the game. So one screw-up, one missed assignment, one careless ball-handling situation, one bad call, you know, you can pay for it, and they make you pay for it.
What are your thoughts on the job Romeo has done there? I know entering the season, there was some talk out there, if I'm not mistaken, that this was an important year for him.
Well, I think that the team's gotten better each year. I think they've made some good off-season additions personnel-wise, and I think they're playing – they play sound. They play aggressively. You know, they make you beat them. They don't make a lot of mistakes, and they take advantage of yours.